Toronto Film Festival is one of the world's largest cinema festivals, hosting more than 300 screenings of contemporary films. Some of its debut titles are already being anointed for Oscar gold, and among a crowded program is one indie film with an El Paso connection. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is El Pasoan and filmmaker Zach Passero, who edited the new film All Cheerleaders Die, which was selected by and received its world premiere at the Toronto Film Festival last week. Zach Passero is back from Canada. I'm happy to have him back on the program today. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's been years, I think, since you were on the program.
Has.
I've been keeping track of your career, and you have been going in so many directions the last few years, working on so many projects. Man, Toronto. What was that like?
Toronto was amazing. Well, it was, for one, just getting there was insane. My future wife, Hannah, and I, we made a cross-country trip up to Toronto, making key stops. We stopped at the director's home and stayed there a night, and then stopped at the sound designer's home in Detroit.
Wow.
And then we went into Toronto from there. And
you should make a documentary of that.
Yeah, it was an adventure in itself. It was kind of, we got to reunite with everybody on the way. But Toronto itself was just overwhelming. Mm. It's a huge festival. The city is huge.
Yeah, one of the world's largest film festivals. It's amazing. You remember where you were when you heard that your film was going to be in the Toronto Film Festival?
Let's see. I think I was in my backyard here, actually. I was probably just having my morning coffee, and it was one of the directors. It's a co-direction, but Lucky McKee called me, and he's like, hey, he's like, don't say anything yet, but we heard that we got into Toronto, and he said, the producer's probably going to call you later today. Just act surprised. it was great.
Fantastic. Well, I looked up the film listings for this year's Toronto International Film Festival on their website, which is going through Sunday. It's just about to wrap up. So you were there for the front end of the festival. But what I love about All Cheerleaders Die is it's on the same page. The very first entry is 12 Years a Slave, which is the film that everybody's talking about is going to be the Best Picture Oscar. And you scroll down and a couple of entries below is All Cheerleaders Die, which gives you a range of what Toronto is looking for.
Yeah, no, they have a vast program. I really wished that I could have seen more films when I was there. There was so much I would have wanted to see. It's saturated with great stuff.
So All Cheerleaders Die, I guess, walk us through a description of what this film is. This was part of the Midnight Madness, correct?
Yes, it kicked off the Midnight Madness part of the festival. And it's basically kind of like a high school popcorn horror movie. Oddly enough, it's a remake of Lucky McKee and Chris Sievertson, the two directors, and myself all went to college together. And we lived together, and we all kind of got along and helped one another on our projects. And when we graduated, Chris and Lucky decided no one was going to give them any money to do anything they wanted. So they put together this early, like when the first DV cameras had just come out. So they put together this movie, All Cheerleaders Die. And it was just kind of like a, you know, throwing themselves into the fire pan of learning how to make a feature for reels after being in, you know, college and just making short films. And here we are almost 15 years later, which is really scary to say.
Wow.
Here they decided that, you know, they had kind of gone their different directions and made, you know, their individual projects. You know, Lucky had done May and The Woman and The Woods, and Chris had gone and done The Lost, and the Lindsay Lohan kind of giallo, I Know Who Killed Me. And they just kind of felt like they'd gotten so serious and weird in their directions, like, why not get back together, kind of do something fun and exciting and just kind of like something like for high school kids, basically.
So I know, at least with Lucky McKee, though, you've continued a relationship there, working together on projects.
Yes.
Does that help when you know so intimately the folks you're working with?
Yeah, it makes, you know, we all helped each other on projects in school, and then it just kind of continued when we left. And Lucky and I just kind of always had a very similar understanding of influences, basically, and our cinema language is very similar. And so in May, I worked in one capacity, and then, you know, he did like a Masters of Horror episode, and I did some animation. Then when he switched over, he did a film called Red, and then did The Woman, and then now All Cheerleaders Die. We just kind of started this. I started editing with him in Red, and we just kind of really jived on our understanding. He he and I have the similar language of just like he can express what's supposed to happen in a scene or how he wants it to feel. And then he just kind of cuts me loose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can emerge at the end of the day with the scene and show it to him. And he can just kind of get a visceral feel for it and give me some feedback and send me back in. And it's a great working relationship. It's so fun and freeing. And he really pushes me, which I really appreciate.
Is the Midnight Madness program there at Toronto International Film Festival, is that a competitive program?
Yes, it is competitive. Yeah, so we'll see. I guess it's for audience competition at least.
So in a few days, you may get another call.
Yeah, hopefully. That'd be really nice. It seemed to do really – we saw the first night it kicked off in a theater of 1,200 people, which was jam-packed. And this was the first
time. That's the way to premiere a film.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. Prior to this, the only screenings we had were in Lucky lives in Oklahoma in kind of this secluded area. So when I edit with him, I disappear for a couple months into his home and we just kind of buckle down. And so our screenings consisted of, you know, his few local friends there in his living room on his theater system there. And so all of a sudden, you know, we didn't have completed visual effects. There's no completed score at that point. And so now we're seeing everything put together at once with 1,200 people, and it was just like a crazy fun, visceral experience. I kind of had a feeling it would go over well, but it was a great ride for everybody.
As filmmakers, you all must learn so much from that experience of having a real solid crowd in front of the film for the first time, because in your head, you have hopes and dreams, and you think your decisions you're making are going to play well for an audience, but then to have an actual audience respond.
Oh, it's essential. And these days, I don't know, you know, it used to be very common for studios to have, you know, test screenings and things like that. And they also got a bum rap because studios tended to take every small comment and decide that they needed to change the movie that way. But they are really essential. You just, you know, you're working in a isolation. You have these ideas and you think they're
coming across.
Incredible
time pressure.
Yeah. And you don't know how things are actually playing. They play to you because you know your intentions. But then all of a sudden you start watching it with an audience, even if it's five people, and you can kind of feel what they're feeling. It becomes like this empathic experience, and you can see what's actually playing, what's not working. You get a sense of the pacing that you didn't have, you know, because you had your idea of what it was supposed to be. And luckily, just those few little screenings we had in Oklahoma paid off because it all was balanced out. I was scared to death watching it, you know, on this 40-foot screen with 1,200 people all of a sudden and getting to feel how they're all taking it in. And it all went really smoothly. I'm actually really proud of the editing work on this one.
Part of the backstory leading up to that debut night, though, is that you all got the call not too much before the screening, saying you were into the festival and were accepted, but that, you know, your film wasn't finished.
Yeah, no, it was a mad dash. Basically, the film, I left Lucky's at the beginning of July. So we had finished the editing. There was 150 visual effects shots to be done. The sound designer hadn't had any work on it. The composer hadn't touched the score at all. And we were a week or two behind deadline for Toronto, but the programmer, Colin, was really kind and gave us a shot and watched the cut we had at that point. And then a couple weeks later, all of a sudden, we found out that we got in. But that also meant that we then had a month to deliver. They wanted all their materials by August 15th for the festival. And so all of a sudden, there's this mad dash to get everything done. And it happened. And miraculously, it was of great quality. There's some amazing people working on this film.
You mentioned you had completed most of the editing and there was not a film score or music yet. When you go to put together out the final music, are you working with a temporary score or just something that helps guide you and rhythmically?
It goes back and forth. There's Lucky specifically loves music and loves rock and roll. And so he picks out a lot of songs and that he has in mind for feelings of scenes.
Yeah.
And
to get the tone right.
Just to get the tone right. And the pacing. Cutting film is a lot like laying out music. There's a rhythm to it. There's a tempo. You have to, depending upon how fast the cuts are, you start kind of changing the perception or people's ideas of pacing and feeling. And when it comes down to it, there's times I really appreciate having music for that. But then there's times when all this mute the audio tracks and just visually cut, because I feel more and more like I kind of stuck on this idea that the sum of like what's happening within a shot or shots that are going to be cut together with movement or geometry, like they all kind of have their own felt rhythm. And and so if you mute that audio, you start feeling something else, and it creates its own kind of rhythm. And a lot of times when you put the music back in, it syncs up and you can kind of fine tune it after that. But
I love having you here to talk about the art of editing, because I think it's one of the things, you know, most people kind of know when good direction is happening. They know when someone's performing well on screen.
Right.
When it looks good, the cinematographer or director of photography has done a great job. You know, they sometimes are aware of the music and how it's affecting them. But editing, I think, is this mystery art for most people.
Yeah, it's invisible. You're not – basically, it's not supposed to be mentioned. It's not supposed to be noticed, really.
And yet it's creating the whole psychology that's sucking you into the film and as those rhythms you're talking about that's working on you maybe subjectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also is – it's the point in the filmmaking process where you actually are – the script gets written. And it gets filmed, and usually it doesn't get – you know, the directors don't get to film everything they wanted as they intended. Or, you know, there's just so many variables in location and actors and personalities. And then you end up with something else completely when all this raw footage comes in. And at that point, it's almost like it's time to throw out the script, see what the story is based on how all those things came together, the acting, the cinematography, and the directing, and then just kind of reconstruct the story. And a lot of times, you know, there's times where it's exactly what was intended from the script, and sometimes there's things that are lost, but some new discoveries that work a lot better. And I really love that idea of this like malleable puzzle. It's there's so many ways it could go, basically.
Well, you're working on a number of other puzzles in which you're playing all the parts. I know you've got a new music video out recently for Ministry.
For
rock video, I guess.
Yeah, that has a crazy mix of visual effects, layers, and live action footage of Al, of course, and some editing tricks. But
and that's you can find that on YouTube, I guess, if you type in Ministry and Perma War.
Yes,
you can see your music
that's
video.
That's accessible.
You're also working on just finishing up an interesting animated project for a group in Australia, where you're animating some audio they have. And if people know Miburo, which is your ongoing sort of odyssey of a particular little character and his Buro.
Yeah, a very odd little odyssey that it will be I'm kind of finishing as time allows, and hopefully something bigger will happen with it.
But, fantastic. Do you have any feature films in the works yourself?
You know, there's one feature film that my writing partner, Justin Stone, wrote, and one of these days we're going to get that made, and hopefully that'll happen within the next couple of years here. But it's something that we're both comfortable letting mature and just happen, basically.
Well, that's great. It's always great to see you, Zach, and have you back in the studio.
Great to be here.
Wish you all the luck with All Cheerleaders Die. I guess we've got one more day before the Toronto Film Festival closes, but hope it's showered with distribution deals.
Yeah, I hope so. It's a fun film, just a fun, bizarre trip.
My guest today has been filmmaker, animator, visual effects specialist, and editor Zach Passero. His latest editing project is the high school horror satire, All Cheerleaders Die, which just received its world premiere at the prestigious Toronto International Film Festival last week. The film was part of the festival's competitive Midnight Madness program and hopes to have a distribution partner soon. For more information on the film, log on to allcheerleadersdiemovie.com. And to watch episodes from Zach Passero's Mi Buro animated series, go to buroboy.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.